Picture this. Allison is one of your patients with a history of Hodgkin's lymphoma. She presented a few days ago with bilateral axillary lymphadenopathy, which was concerning for malignancy. PET-CT imaging was performed, and based on the results, you decided to order biopsies of lymph nodes from both axillae. You received the pathology report, which details normal nodal architecture, loosely packed follicles with varying size and shape, presence of tingible body macrophages, and well-defined mantle zones on all observed lymph nodes. Considering the pathology report and Allison's history, what is your assessment of her lymphadenopathy? Hi and welcome to Audio Breaks. I'm Alex Dennis, and this is the break where we put all hematopoietic malignancies together. Let's jump in! After completing this section, you'll be able to 1. Compare and contrast acute and chronic leukemias. 2. Compare and contrast the morphologic features of benign follicular hypoplasia and follicular lymphoma. 3. Compare and contrast the morphologic and clinical features of low-grade and high-grade lymphomas. 4. Know the classical translocations and name the diseases and prognostic significance, if any, associated with these translocations. If you've gone through and studied all of the leukemias, lymphomas, and plasma cell disorders, you probably feel like you've been hit with the good old medical school fire hose. Now's a good time to take a step back from all the details, make sure that you remember the underlying framework, and pull together the information that connects several different diseases. In this episode, we'll specifically revisit some of the diseases that we often talk about in pairs. Acute versus chronic leukemias, benign lymph node diseases versus lymphoma, and low-grade versus high-grade lymphomas. Also, in case you haven't already done this on your own, we'll pull together all the important translocations, their respective diseases, and the reasons why we should remember them. Part 1. Acute versus chronic leukemias. There are two major differences between acute and chronic leukemias: the clinical course of the disease and the maturity of the white blood cell that's involved. Acute leukemia is like getting hit by a car. The disease goes 0 to 100 suddenly, causes devastating symptoms, and is fatal if not treated. Chronic leukemias are the opposite. They have a slow development over time, so much so that there may be no symptoms at the time of diagnosis. Now, one of these leukemia's malignant cells consists of immature cells, while the other one, of mature cells. I remember this by thinking that acute leukemia has the malignant blasts, or very immature cells, because generally speaking, undifferentiated cells are the best proliferators. Since acute leukemia goes 0 to 100, its malignant cells have to be the fast proliferating blast cells, which leaves the more mature cells for chronic leukemias. You may have noticed that I didn't include a lymphoid or myeloid origin as a differentiating factor between acute and chronic leukemias, and that's because both acute and chronic leukemias can be of lymphoid or myeloid origin. Hence, AML, ALL, CLL, and CML. Let's stop here to check what we just learned. In what cancer would a patient have abnormal accumulation of blasts in the bone marrow? That would be an acute leukemia, which represents a neoplastic proliferation of blast cells. Alright, now that we have our basics, let's consider how these cancers would look different on blood smears. We mentioned blasts, or very immature cells, are the malignant cells of acute leukemias. What do these cells look like? They're large, with a large nucleus and large nucleoli. That's the site where ribosomal RNA is assembled, by the way. In other words, they're big. But the key is, they have scant cytoplasm, which means they have a high nuclear cytoplasmic, or NC ratio. And the high NC ratio is commonly associated with malignant cells. So, on an H&E stain of a blood smear, these cells would have a prominent, deep purple nucleus because of the hematoxylin, surrounded by a little clear pinkish rim, the cytoplasm. And though no single characteristic identifies a blast, the combination of all of these is a pretty strong indicator for a blast. On the other hand, H&E of a blood smear from a patient with a chronic leukemia might just reveal a greater than usual amount of maturing neutrophilic cells, anywhere along the differentiation lineage. Promyelocytes, myelocytes, metamyelocytes, and multiple segmented neutrophils. Let's try another question before moving on. What are the characteristics of the malignant cells of acute leukemia on blood smear? Blast cells are large and immature cells. They have large nuclei and nucleoli with scant cytoplasm, conferring them a high NC ratio. Part 2. Big lymph node. Is it benign or malignant? If a patient comes in with an enlarged lymph node, one of the first things the patient and the doctor want to know is whether it's benign or malignant. There are several clinical factors that can help answer that question, but sometimes it comes down to taking a biopsy sample and looking at it under the microscope. In the microscopic examination of a lymph node biopsy, the diagnosis is sometimes obvious based on whether the normal architecture of the node is preserved or grossly disturbed. Other times, it's difficult to tell whether the pathologic process is benign or malignant. Benign follicular hyperplasia, for example, can look very much like follicular lymphoma. Stick with me while I attempt to create some visuals. Okay, first, consider a longitudinal section through a lymph node. Picture that kidney shape, and add to that circles throughout its periphery, or cortex. These are the follicles, and that's where B cells are localized. Normally, when there's an immune response, antigens make their way to the lymph nodes, where they activate several B cells located in different follicles. When B cells within a follicle get activated, they start multiplying really quickly, which causes a germinal center to appear in the middle of the follicle. And then the resting B cells get pushed out to what becomes the surrounding mantle zone. A follicle with a germinal center and surrounding mantle zone is now called a secondary follicle. Anyway, the point of this massive replication is to get the B cell that contains the perfect antibody recipe for the given antigen. So there's a lot of tangible body macrophages in the germinal centers to eat up all of the B cells that don't make the cut. So in benign follicular hyperplasia, you'll see random proliferation of some of the follicles. It's a polyclonal proliferation because different B cells are multiplying. The normal nodal architecture is maintained, the follicles are loosely packed and of varying size and shape, the mantle zone is well defined. There's tangible body macrophages. So it's kind of like the normal thing would be happening, except that it's just happening randomly. In follicular lymphoma, you're getting a clonal, aberrant, unregulated expansion of a B cell. So the normal nodal architecture is completely obliterated. Circles, i.e. the follicle, everywhere down to the core. The follicles are now densely packed and uniform because, again, it's a clonal expansion. No mantle zone because we're not dealing with a normal secondary follicle here. And finally, the follicles don't have the tangible body macrophages. The cancer cells got rid of them to prevent getting eaten. Alright, that might be overly simplistic, but that's kind of the idea. Let's see if this one stuck. What are three features of follicular lymphoma that differentiate it from benign follicular hyperplasia? In follicular lymphoma, the follicles are densely packed. There's obliteration of normal architecture and absence of tangible body macrophages. Part 3. Low-grade versus high-grade lymphomas. There are two major differences between low-grade and high-grade lymphomas: the clinical course of the disease and the cell type involved. In cancer pathology, grading is simply a microscopic assessment of malignancy or differentiation of tumor tissue. The more the tumor tissue looks like the parent tissue, the better. The more undifferentiated or different looking, the worst. Rule of thumb, in cancer, the more undifferentiated, the worst off. So low grade, low severity, high grade, high severity. That means low grade lymphomas are composed of small, mature appearing lymphocytes, and treatment is often delayed until the patient develops severe symptoms. In contrast, high grade lymphomas are very rapidly growing. You're looking at large, highly mitotically active cells. The disease has an aggressive course, so the treatment should be as aggressive and immediate. Here's the takeaway question on this one. What is grading in cancer pathology, and what grading of lymphoma has the better prognosis? Grading is a microscopic assessment of differentiation of tumor tissue. Low-grade lymphomas consist of tumor cells that resemble the parent tissue. They are slow in growth, have little mitotic activity, and typically run an indolent course. Part 4. Translocations. Okay, now to the best part of this episode, buckle in. Who doesn't love memorizing translocations? I'm going to be real here. You really need to know these key translocations when it comes to leukemias and lymphomas. So we're going to go over them together, and I'm going to give you the many tricks that helped me learn them inside out. We'll split this talk into three big sections: the CML translocation, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma translocations, and AML translocations. Okay, here it goes. Let's get 922 translocation out of the way first. It's the classic cancer translocation. You've probably already heard about it. The resulting chromosome is called the Philadelphia chromosome. It's present in all cases of chronic myeloid leukemia. 922 translocation, Philadelphia chromosome, CML. This translocation results in a BCR-ABL fusion protein, which is a powerful tyrosine kinase causing unregulated cell growth. Prognosis has actually improved dramatically since the development of tyrosine kinase inhibitors. The Philadelphia chromosome is also seen in some cases of ALL and indicates a poor prognosis. Alright, in what cancer does the 922 translocation indicate a poor prognosis? This translocation indicates a poor prognosis when it appears in ALL cancers, though it's the defining translocation of CML. Moving on to non-Hodgkin's lymphomas now. Let's start a discussion with chromosome 14, since that'll get us a lot of points. The immunoglobulin heavy gene is encoded on chromosome 14. If you write down IH, capital I small h, for immunoglobulin heavy chain, it's the number 14 flipped vertically. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. Well, you can imagine who transcribes that gene a lot. That's right, the B cell. And how does it work out? Basically, tag any oncogene to that heavy chain gene in a B cell, and you have yourself a malignancy, specifically a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. For instance, the 814 translocation is present in most cases of Burkitt's lymphoma. If this helps you, the 8 looks like the B from Burkitt. And in this case, it's the oncogene c-MYC that's tagged onto the heavy chain gene. What else? Follicular lymphoma. 14-18 translocation. In this case, it's the anti-apoptotic BCL2 that gets overexpressed from being tagged to the heavy chain locus. That's easy to remember because in the follicles there needs to be a lot of apoptosis to get rid of the B cells. And where else would you want that really? I remember that BCL2 is anti-apoptotic by thinking BCL stands for be careful not to die. Let's do another one. 11-14 translocation, mantle cell lymphoma. Another non-Hodgkin's lymphoma from B cells. Here, it's cyclin D1 on chromosome 11 that tags onto the heavy chain locus. And given that cyclin D1 is the strongest oncogene, this one has a poor prognosis. The one from D1 will help you remember it's 11. Lastly, the fact that cyclin D1 is the strongest oncogene helps me tie it to mantle cell lymphoma, because only a strong oncogene could turn this usually resting zone cancerous. Okay, I know that was a lot, but that does it for our non-Hodgkin's lymphomas. Let's check what stuck. Can you remember what cancer is associated with the 14-18 translocation? That would be follicular lymphoma, where BCL2 is overexpressed, preventing apoptosis of B cells. Okay, now for our trickiest section in this episode, let's talk AML cytogenetic abnormalities. There are a few different types of AML, and some of them don't even have cytogenetic abnormalities. Let's focus on the ones that do. The 821 translocation is present in many cases of AML-M2, which is acute myeloid leukemia with maturation. It confers a favorable prognosis in adults, but not in children. And remember how we said that the 922 translocation is present in some cases of ALL, conferring it a poor prognosis? Well, subtract one from each of these numbers, and you get the favorable prognosis, 821 translocation cancer. Another tip is that with maturation should cue you into a good prognosis. The 1517 translocation is present in and diagnostic of all cases of the M3 subtype of AML, which is acute promyelocytic leukemia. The treatment is all transretinoic acid, which is abbreviated ATRA, which is usually started right away and results in an excellent prognosis. And that's consistent with the fact that this translocation disrupts the retinoic acid receptor. To remember the translocation, remind yourself that retinoic acid is also treatment for acne. Teenagers tend to get acne around 15 or 17 years old. Now remember that the translocation for APL is the 1517 translocation. Inversion 16 is present in many cases of the M4 subtype of AML, which is acute myelomonocytic leukemia. These cases usually have large eosinophils with dark granules seen on the smear. Cases of AML M4 with this translocation have a favorable prognosis with therapy. Kind of a stretch, but I remember this one because it's the first translocation that doesn't involve two chromosomes and 4 raised to the power of 2 is 16. So in version 16 for AML subtype M4. Before we cover our last two abnormalities, let's stop for a quick check. What cancer is the 15-17 translocation diagnostic for? The 15-17 translocation is diagnostic for the M3 subtype of AML, and it has an excellent prognosis with all trans-retinoic acid treatment. And for the last two abnormalities, 11q23 is seen mostly in AML variants with a monocytic component, such as the M4 and M5 subtypes of AML. There are over 100 types of specific rearrangements and translocation patterns, so no need to try to remember the specific partner chromosomes on this one. In general, 11q23 rearrangements carry a very poor prognosis. And finally, FLT3 mutation, present in 30% of cases of AML, with an increased frequency in the M3 subtype of AML. FLT3 is a receptor tyrosine kinase that stimulates unregulated cell proliferation. This mutation is associated with a high tumor burden, poor response to therapy, frequent relapse, and overall poor survival. All right, that does it for this episode on hematopoietic malignancies. Let's see what we're taking away from this episode. What differentiates acute and chronic leukemias in terms of disease course and malignant cells? Acute leukemias are defined by a rapid onset and progression, with the dominant cell being the blast. Chronic leukemias are slowly progressive and composed of more mature cells. What are some of the histological differences observed between benign follicular hyperplasia and follicular lymphoma? Benign follicular hyperplasia contains variably sized follicles with mantle zones and tangible bodies in the germinal centers. Follicular lymphoma has uniformly sized, tightly packed follicles that obliterate the nodal architecture and do not contain tangible body macrophages. What is grading in cancer pathology? Grading is a microscopic assessment of differentiation of tumor tissue. How do low-grade lymphomas and high-grade lymphomas compare in terms of disease course and observed malignant cells? Low-grade lymphomas have an indolent course and are composed of small, mature-appearing cells. High-grade lymphomas have an aggressive course and are composed of large, mitotically active cells. What are the classic translocations associated with Burkitt's lymphoma, follicular lymphoma, and mantle cell lymphoma? These are all non-Hodgkin's lymphomas, and their translocations all include chromosome 14, where the locus for the immunoglobulin heavy chain resides. Burkitt's has the 8-14 translocation, think 8 for the B in Burkitt. Follicular lymphoma has the 14-18 translocation, and mantle cell lymphoma has the 11-14 translocation. Recall that there are also several other hematologic malignancies that have well-known translocations and are important for diagnosis, treatment, and prognosis. Armed with your newfound knowledge, let's think back to Allison from the beginning of the episode. If you recall, she has a history of Hodgkin's lymphoma and presented with bilateral axillary lymphadenopathy a few days ago. You ordered biopsies of lymph nodes from both axillae, and the pathology report details normal nodal architecture, loosely packed follicles with varying size and shape, presence of tangible body macrophages, and well-defined mantle zones on all observed lymph nodes. What will you tell her about the prognosis of her lymphadenopathy based on the histological findings? You tell her that you have excellent news. Though, as we had previously discussed, the PET CT imaging findings were concerning, the histological findings of normal nodal and follicular architecture with the appearance of all expected cells and zones are highly suggestive of a benign proliferation and are not at all indicative of recurrent cancer. Given your patient's history, you establish regular follow-ups at the recommended frequency to monitor for disease recurrence. And that is a wrap on hematopoietic malignancies. I'll leave you with this. My all-time favorite teacher once said, knowing the translocations aren't rote memorization, because actually, if you know the function of every gene that gets translocated, then the translocations make perfect sense. I really got a kick out of that saying the first time I heard it, for the obvious reason that that involves rote memorizing every gene's location, but he had a point. In any case, I hope you take away a few handy tricks from this episode, and if you liked what you heard, make sure to like and subscribe to this podcast. Your feedback always helps us improve. You can also get the full RxBricks experience online at www.usmle-rx.com. I will catch you on the next one.